Welcome to All the Bits, a fake radio show about board games, the community, and all the lovely, lovely bits. All the Bits is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network and is sponsored by Board Game Bliss, a store where you can find amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. Without further ado, here are your hosts, Sean and Michelle.
Hello, everyone.
Let's do that.
And welcome. Welcome.
Keep going.
To episode. Wait, I moved from robot to I don't even know what that is.
Valley game.
Episode 64.
In this episode's bits, we will talk about Aeons and Legacy, Nova Luna, Silver and Gold, Santa Monica. We will discuss that.
Okay.
The pettiest reason you passed on a game. And get up to all of our usual antics of asking pointless questions, guessing games, and drooling over bits.
And talking like robots.
This will be super fun. We will talk like we are robots.
Best episode ever.
Oh, yeah. Woo. This is going to be a gooder.
It's going to be something.
May not have the spark, but this is going to be a gooder.
Oy. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the next best thing to hit podcasting since 2010.
Yeah, well, it doesn't take much to be the next best thing after this year, so...
It's true. It's true. How's Sean?
You know, I'm okay. I'm, you know, what was I going to say? I was going to say something before when we were doing our voices, but I forgot what I was going to say.
That's a real shame.
I know. I can't remember. How's Michelle?
I am good. It is summer. The weather is generally quite nice. I am enjoying this aspect of my life.
I don't know about you guys in the boonies down south, but we get hail like every second day.
Yeah, it's been kind of crazy, hey?
Which is weird. That it's like 25 degrees 1 second or whatever you Americans call it. It's at 80, whatever, I don't know. But then like 2 seconds later, oh, look, there's a giant hailstorm. And it's really neat for my perch here in the basement / i.e. Sean's game room / man cave, because I just like look up because I'm looking up through the window and I just see all this like hail rushing down. It's kind of creepy, but cool.
I love a good storm. I always open the door and just watch. It's the best.
Is it though?
But not as good as playing board games.
Have you ever played board game in a hailstorm?
Yes.
Nailed it.
Almost every time there's a hailstorm, I'm playing board games.
Sweet.
Probably. But speaking of playing board games, so nice. We're recording this during the epic year of 2020, which I'm sure will go down in history as the year of the COVID. And I found this tool that I wanted to quickly plug on the podcast before we jumped in because I thought it was kind of cool where a lot of us are board gaming online.
Oh.
And on BGG, I'm pretty sure I found it, but it's we'll put the URL in the notes.
Yeah.
But it's a little tool that will connect to your BGG collection and then tell you which games you can play online and on which platforms.
Yeah, it's really, I hadn't, until Michelle pointed it out to me, I hadn't seen it. And I'm like looking at it now and it's like, yeah, it's pretty cool.
I haven't used it, so I'm assuming it works.
I don't know. Yeah, it takes a while to kind of get going. So what you do is you connect it to your BGG thingamabob, your BGG account. So something that would be really important for this, y'all, is that if you are using this tool, Michelle, you might want to update your BGG collection more than once a year, right around the Secret Santa. Oh, just sure. Saying, that's some friendly advice.
That's the only reason you do it.
But like, here's like, it goes in alphabetical order, and like I'm seeing like 6 Nimit here. So then it gives you like a link to people, and so if you click it, then it takes it to the better Spielette website that has it, Altiplano, which would be the next one, which I don't own anymore, but you play on Tabletopia and so on and so forth. Yeah, so that's a really cool.
Pretty cool. Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll put the URL for that in the show notes if we remember.
Yes, I will remember. Don't worry. It's here in the thing. So look under, I don't know, I'll put it somewhere, the link we talked about, and you're Ask Me Anything where I put the timestamps. Also,
speaking of Ask Me Anything.
What about our code?
Oh, right. Can't forget our nifty code from our sponsor, Board Game Bliss, which is, the code is ATB-TAKE5OFF100. And that, my friends, will take $5 off your order if it's over $100. Whoa. Okay. And that's one use per customer.
Yes. Awesome. So if you have any answers, go ahead and use it because it's pretty cool. And we're getting into Gen Con season, something.
Yes,
There will be some new games coming out.
There will be. Yep.
Speaking of, yes.
There better be.
I'm sure there'll be some.
There will be.
And speaking of Ask Me Anything.
No. Throwback.
Back.
Yeah, this is our. Oh boy, this is a really smooth episode.
Oh yeah, be so smooth. This is our bit wherein we ask each other useless questions about this beautiful hobby.
That's true.
And speaking of useless, not useless. I love this feature, which I've done before, but when I'm feeling not particularly creative or can't come up with a question about Michelle's dog, I go to the BGG random game thingamabob that you can find under the browse tab on BGG, and I'm going to tell Michelle a game that pops up, and she's going to have to tell me if she would like to keep it, play it, or burn it, or buy it, play it, or burn it.
Buy, play, burn. Okay. Burn.
All right. I had to do this a few times because the first time I came up, it kept coming up with expansions. But if it comes up with an expansion while I'm doing it, I'm just going to tell you what the game is. But the first one here, Michelle, is Dwarf Knuckle. This game was design and art by Matt Pierce. It's a game crafter game. And this is a game about dwarves knocking each other into pits and collecting gold. Dwarves are natural fighters, and the game naturally contains a lot of fighting. It also contains forest elves for you to kick.
And it has one rating and one comment. And it's rated a 10. So go out and grab that one. Well, I almost want to say play it for the name alone, but it sounds terrible. So we're going to burn it.
Burn it. All right.
Yeah. I'm not into fighting dwarves. Although I do like to be the dwarf usually in video games. Because I like to just go in for close combat with my axe. Yes. Dwarves have axes, right?
That's what I usually do too. Yeah,
I'm swinging my arms right now, by the way.
Don't knock yourself out.
Thanks.
All right.
I got a question for you, too.
I got another one for you.
Oh, there's more. Oh, right. Okay. Who?
Staying away with just one. Let's be quiet. All right. This is Land on the Moon. I don't know when this came out. I also don't know anything about it because there's nothing on BGG. But I'll give you the first paragraph.
Riveting.
This is a Tiddlywink style game where small plastic rings flying saucers are placed on a launcher at an angle. The ring is pressed down with a flat disc to propel the ring into a playing board set on an angle 2 to 3 feet away.
Wow, this looks bad.
Yeah, how are you getting these? Are you typing it in?
Yeah.
Oh,
am I not supposed to be? Well, I gotta see the image. I mean, if I'm gonna burn it.
This looks pretty cool, actually. I mean, it looks hard like heck.
It looks, sorry, what now?
Like you think,
are we looking at the same image?
Sure, from this, it's a game that looks, the thing says it's from the 60s based on its graphics. Oh,
it looks terrible. I'm going to play it though, because if I burn it, I do not want whatever chemicals are in that plastic to enter into my lungs. So we're going to play it.
That's fair. All right. Okay, that's it. That's all I'll subject you to.
That's. I do like the cover. It is very...
Moon Man in it. They look like saucers from like the Jetsons. Definitely 60s.
Yeah, that's pretty great. All right. My question for you is a lot less fun.
Oh.
But if there was one gaming annoyance that you could choose to never have to deal with again, what would it be? So I'm talking like slip covers, misprints, the box is too big, the insert doesn't work.
So gaming annoyance, would like oversized boxes count?
Yeah.
Does that count as a gaming annoyance?
Yeah.
Because that I understand the reason behind, but that drives me absolutely nuts.
So you're talking like special collector edition big boxes, or are you talking about when a game is like one deck of cards and it's in a box, Ticket to Ride?
Yes, exactly. That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. That annoys me as well. Nuts.
Yeah. I mean, inserts, I don't care because I usually chuck them. Rule book misprints also drive me absolutely. I guess maybe it's the linguist in me and the literacy, you know, the person who does lots of literacy stuff, but misprints in rule books drives me absolutely ballistic too. Not ballistic, but it drives me a little bit crazy too. Yeah. Cause I feel like someone should be able to read it over and do it.
Yeah. It's bizarre. Some of the things that are missed, but then again, I've worked for companies where everyone's read, say, a brochure and we're like, okay, send it to print. And then, managed to miss something. So
I know, and it is very easy to top down things, but yeah.
Yeah. I thought for sure you'd say slip covers.
So yes.
Oh.
Slip covers do bother me a lot, as you know, but I feel like I don't have that many slip covers, right? So it's like there may be two or three, whatever. I don't have a ton, whereas I feel like I have a lot. There are so many like oversized boxes. That's kind of, yeah. That's the reason I did think slip covers right away. But
I also do not like boxes that are bigger than the game depth. You know what I mean? I kind of talked a little bit about that with Chai, but where it's like you kind of think of these like smaller games as having smaller boxes, you know? And that like amounts to the amount of gameplay that you get with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very, very, that's very petty, but there you go.
No, that's fair.
Annoyance.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Like having a half hour game. A half hour game that takes up like a regular size Ticket to Ride box type deal. That I agree with that too. But, you know, you'll still keep getting them and playing them. So
that is a fact.
As will everyone.
Yes.
Speaking
I'm not,
of,
I'm not above these annoyances.
Speaking of not being above annoyances.
No, wait, that's Ask Me Anything.
Do. I couldn't transition into a robot voice.
I was drinking water.
I thought you were going to say I was drinking. No, that was me before and whatever. Okay, here we go. This is our guess the game bit, Michelle.
Wherein we give each other vague, then specific, then super obvious clues from the Board Game Geek to guess a game. And we ask that you guess along. So are you ready? I'm going to give you some hints.
Bring it on, sister.
All right. This was published in 2017.
Okay.
Has a current rating of 8.1 with 9,900 ratings.
Oh, it sounds like a gooder.
It plays 1-4 in 30 to 120 minutes and has a weight of 3.98.
Psyched.
No, good guess though. Okay. You have talked about this on the podcast. I'll tell you that much.
Okay.
The categories are economic and science fiction.
I was going to say obsession, but no, not science.
And I don't think it's quite a 3.98.
Economic and science fiction. And I've talked about that's a heavy game too.
Have. Yeah. Do you want some mechanisms?
Sure.
There's a lot.
Okay, give me the main.
Although I feel like all games are like that now. Okay, so we've got some dice rolling. It's a solo game.
Oh, it's a solo game.
Yeah, it plays 1-4. Okay. It's got some tug of war.
Okay.
Some turn order claim action, whatever that means.
Okay, that means having to like claim first player.
Okay.
Maybe. Okay.
Yeah, I would. That makes sense. Variable player powers, worker placement, worker placement, different worker types.
Oh, everything.
Yeah, I was not lying.
It's not brass, is it? No, like that can't play soul.
No. It was crowdfunded.
Of course it was. It's so high. And I've talked it. I like it when I talked about it.
I don't actually listen to what you say. So, no. I think you did. I think you, yeah, I think you did. I don't know if you've gone back to it.
I still got nothing because it's like every game ever.
Okay. There, it's a two-tiered worker placement system.
The heck does that mean?
I don't know because I have not played this game.
Oh, you have not played it?
No.
It sounds like your type of game. Well, I guess
it does, not actually. Not I need I need to try
it. Is it Cerebria? No.
No. There's actually not a whole lot. Okay, oh, let's see. So here's the family. So it has miniatures.
Rising Sun? No.
Nope. Science fiction. It was crowdfunded.
Miniatures. Right. It's got miniatures.
Mm-hmm.
Miniatures. Cry Hap? No.
Theme. Okay, this should give it away, or at least point you very heavily in the right direction. The theme is time travel.
Anachrony?
There you go.
Yeah, Anachrony does kind of have a little bit of literally everything in it. That's
you liked
fair.
It, right?
I did. Yeah, it's just, it's a bear. It's a bear to set up and a bear to teach.
Yeah.
And, yeah. I guess it has miniatures, but doesn't have miniatures. But the miniatures make it so much cooler. So
yeah, I'm looking at painted minis right now.
Yeah, it's the separate. So I think it's like, I don't think with the base game you actually get the minis. I think
no.
You just get chit, but then you just like slide the chits into the minis, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, the exoplanet suits or something expansion.
Yeah. Yeah, I owned it briefly.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, but then I realized I never was able to get it to the table. And then I think I've mentioned this on the show. A couple of years ago at FallCon, I was teaching games or one of our local convention, and I ended up teaching it three times.
Ooh.
To three different groups of people, and that kind of soured me on it because it was
That's
just
fair.
Exhausting. Like, I literally spent almost a whole day just teaching that game, and yeah. It was just exhausting. So, but it is a really good game. It's I think my favorite of the Mind Clash games that I've played. Yeah.
Cool.
All right, you ready for yours?
Sure.
All right. This game came out in 1999.
Oh boy.
It currently has a 7.2 on BGG. Where are the ratings? Why am I not seeing the rating? Oh, here we go. With 35,000 ratings and 8,600 comments. It plays is a two-player affair that plays in 30 minutes with a weight of 1.50.
Lost Cities?
Yes, that was fast. Wow, Woo! Look at you. Woot, woot, woot.
Wow, that game's 21 years old.
It is.
Wow, that's crazy.
The new art. I'm looking at my copy here, and I'm looking at like the new copy. I guess this is Vincent Dutre. It looks like Vincent Dutre art, but the new copy is so much. The art is so much nicer.
Is it? I haven't seen. I have the old.
Yeah, that's what I have too. It looks pretty nice. It's got that. Yeah.
I didn't realize. I figured they just updated the box art. I didn't know they actually updated.
Oh, I don't know if they. I'm just looking at the box art.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I can't really. Yeah, they might have.
It looks the same on the back of the book.
Yes, yeah, I think it's the same. Yeah, it's the same. But I really like that.
Okay. Yeah, it does look the same.
I could blow up the pictures, but...
It is. It looks the same.
All right.
Okay, so...
So, Pew. This is our robots crapping out. Pew.
This is our robot, Pew, Pew.
Wherein we explain games poorly and then tell you what we think of them after a play or more using our super official scale of wait, this is us and all the bits always just going back to the well even when it's completely empty and there's nothing in it.
oh, is this the line? Let us just cross that for
oh, something. Yeah. No, yeah. So what's our scale, Michelle?
Our scale is if we rate a game a 1, it's a hard no. A 2 is a meh. 3, I mean, it's fine. 4, tis a gooder. And 5, it's got the spark.
The spark. All right. Shall I pew pew you first?
Sure. Pew. Go pew pew.
Pew pew pew. Should I say the whole name? No, I won't do that. Okay, fine. All right. I
think really we've hit our limit of robot talking for this episode.
So I've been, we've been discussing this via text, but my daughter's like into Cars now and like the movie Cars. And she really likes Luigi, the little mechanic car. Mm-hmm. And she's always asking me to talk in my Luigi voice, which I feel like if there was anybody of Italian heritage near me, they would be very offended by it. But I can do it with her, and it's exhausting. Like the last few nights, I've had to read her bedtime story in my horrible, like, stereotypical Italian voice, and it is absolutely exhausting.
It does
just
sound
like
exhausting.
Just like doing the pew pew.
In the robot voice. Just like recording this podcast with you.
It really is, man. I need to take a cold shower, and then I pass out. It's just really bad. All right, here we go. My first pew pew is Aeon's End: Legacy. This is a 2019 release from Indie Boards and Cards, and it came out, I said, in 2019, designed by Nick Little and Nick Little the First or Nick Little One. It says on BGG and Kevin Riley, with art by Daniel Solis, whose art I usually absolutely adore. And it plays 1-4 and plays in 45 to 90 minutes, and has a weight of 2.78. Now, I've been completely, I don't know where on the whole Aeon's End thing. Have you played Aeon's End, Michelle?
I have not, no. It's a deck builder, right?
It's a deck, yes, it is a deck builder, and I think the reason playing Aeon's End Legacy is my first foray into Aeon's End. Now, okay. For those of you who don't know, there's Aeon's End base games, and there's been a whole bunch of expansions, but I think they tend to like release like almost like big box expansions most of the time. So it's like it's hard to know where to get started, and they're all standalone. And I think that's one of the reasons I've been kind of, oh, where do I start with this? And two is I think it's more of that like deck building attacking type deal, so like Ascension, Legacy, Marvel Legendary, things like that. And I'm not always a huge fan of those types of deck buildings. I'm more of like the deck building and like, you know, Dominion, Clank, those type of things where you're mostly just buying stuff to try and buy better stuff, and you're kind of doing lots of that sort of deck building type thing, if you get my drift. After finishing Clank Legacy, I was kind of like, okay, I would like a new Legacy game. I would like to try a Legacy game that maybe my wife would enjoy, which I'll get to in a second. So I picked this up and cracked it out and have played a couple of the missions so far, and or a couple of the sessions so far in it. And like most Legacy games, what you are doing is you're starting off base. So from what I understand, it's very similar. Again, having not played Aeon's End, it's very similar to Aeon's End regular. As you're reading through the book, though, you'll notice there are tons of spots where it says add a sticker after chapter 2, add a sticker after chapter 4, add a sticker after blah, blah. So very similar to any other Legacy game. And that's all I know about it. Like, from what I'm doing some reading online, it seems like some of the characters in the game are similar to the actual, to regular Aeon's End, but you name, of course, like any other Legacy game, you name your own character, and then you kind of move forward from there. So I'll give you the base, because I don't want to get too much into the game, obviously, because A, I've only played it a couple times, but B, I don't want to accidentally spoil anything, and I'm horrible at monitoring what I'm saying. So I don't have to be editing stuff out. So what you are doing in this game, though, is basically you have a baddie, you have a big baddie, you have to try and defeat. You start off with a base hand that has just a bunch of gems in it, which gem is your buying power. It gives you, I can't remember offhand what it is, but it lets you buy new cards. And you have some sparks, which give you fighting power. That's kind of it. And then you have nine piles in the supply piles in the middle, which for the most part in chapter one, so I'm not spoiling anything, just have cards that amp up that give you, let's say, instead of one gem, it gives you two gems or three gems. So it lets you increase what you can buy. And then the firepower, what you're going to fight with, also kind of increases. So there's one that instead of dealing one damage, it deals two damage and three damage and so forth. That's kind of the regular deck building things that you would expect from any kind of deck building. From what I gathered at Aeon's End, at least so far, that I'm not going to spoil, that starts in Chapter 1, and I think the original, the kind of regular Aeon's End games have this as well, is there are two things that are a little bit different about this. Is a deck building game where you don't actually shuffle your deck ever, which I found really interesting and involves a different level of strategy that you have to keep in mind. So when your deck runs out, like normal any deck building game I've ever played, is that you, when your deck runs out, you shuffle your discard pile and draw up to whatever hand. In this one, what you do is, though, you flip over your pile, you flip it over from your discard pile to your draw pile, and then you draw from the bottom up. Mm-hmm. So this can kind of come into play is where you place your cards. And much like any deck building game, when you buy something, it goes right into your discard pile. But there's also there are also these things that are called breaches in the game. And this is kind of the other thing that's really different is that. So in the game, again, what I see so far is you have three different types of cards. There are gems, which are buying power. There are spells, which for the most part, they do different things. But for the most part, this is your firepower. And there are relics, which are kind of one-time effects. But anytime you cast a spell, you have to put the spell on a breach, on an open breach. And what that means is you cannot use that spell until a further turn. So you can't cast the spell. Let's say I want to deal two damage to the bad guy. You can't cast that spell and do the damage right away. You have to wait till the next turn. Then your breaches are either open or focused. And if you're on a focused breach, basically means you're paying more if you want to open them. But if you're on a focused breach and you use gems, buying power to open your breaches or focus them. But if you use a focused breach, you have to use your spell the following turn. And if you have an open breach, you can leave your spell there for as long as you want. So this, again, another neat little thing that I haven't really seen in the deck building game. And so this is when you also really have to think about like which spell are you going to use if you have them in the breach slot, because that will go onto your discard pile. So you can kind of determine what you might draw first. And I guess when you play your cards at the end of the round, once you've done everything else, that's when they go on your discard pile. So you have a little bit more strategy there in terms of what you put. That's all I'm going to kind of say about the game. So far, the story is, you know, what you would kind of expect. I'm hoping it ramps up a little bit, but it's been really fun. I really enjoyed it. I initially got this to play with my wife, and this devolved into my wife sitting there knitting and making fun of all the names in
the game. Love it.
There are a bunch of, like, you know, names are just a bunch of random consonants and like a vowel and a bunch of more consonants that you can barely pronounce type thing. So you're just like sitting there making fun. It works really well kind of as a solo experience too, because you kind of have a way to do turn order, but you can just be one. You don't have to double hand it. You know, I think like, what game am I thinking of? Sentinels of the Multiverse. I think you have to have multiple hands when you play. I don't like games where you have to hold multiple hands or do multiple things. You can just be the one player and then there's a way to do the turn. So I kind of just like this, the next game, I kind of just took over by myself and did. And she still made fun of all the names. So it was fun. And she sat there for the story. So that was okay. But I really enjoyed this. Yeah, I really enjoyed this. It's really smooth. It's really streamlined. Again, not knowing, it sounds like it's very similar to Aeon's End, to like base Aeon's End, from what I'm doing. And I'm enjoying it. Like it takes maybe like 50 or 60 minutes, like about an hour to play a game of it, which is really nice. And it seems like, I think when you, again, not a spoiler, it seems like there are 7 chapters in there. I don't know if it's going to add extra stuff. Often these types of games add stuff as you go on. So there might be more. I mean, I don't know. But that's Aeon's End Legacy. And I'm going to right now say it's a gooder. because I really enjoyed my time with it. And also I do believe at the end of it, much like Charterstone, Clank Legacy, you can use it as a standalone game or expansion to other Aeon's end games.
Oh, cool.
And I've heard that it's actually better than those games, in terms of, you know, because, like, yeah, I've heard it mixes in really well with the other ones, at least from, again, some quote-unquote reading I've done.
Cool. Yeah. Legacy, it's fun.
And it's Legacy, and it's, again, I mean, right now it's a very giant box like you would expect from one of these games, but there seems like there's a lot of content in there, and we'll see where it goes. I will touch in at some other point to let y'all know how it's going and what kind of names we can make fun of. So
that's my favorite part. I want to watch just for that.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, my first pew is Nova Luna, which I said I would buy when we did our spiel episode, and I bought it and I played it. So this is this was published in 2019 and has a current rating of 7.4 with 1,200 ratings on BGG. It plays 1 to 4 players in 30 to 60 minutes and has a weight of 1.98. It was designed by Uwe Rosenberg, and he gave credit to Corne van Morsel for one of the mechanisms in the game. The art's by Lucas Siegman, and it's published by Stronghold Games and Edition Spielweiss. Yeah, and it was nominated for the Spiel this year. Mm-hmm. So this is a game, Uwe describes it, or at least I've read it, that Uwe's described it as such. He describes it as a mix between Patchwork and Habitats. Habitats being the Corne van Morsel game that I talked about a few episodes back. But what you're doing is trying to get rid of discs. So you have, I think it's like 21 discs per player, and they're these really little tiny, tiny little things. And in the middle of the table is a round board with a number of tiles on the outside of it and a moon statue. And on your turn, you simply move said moon statue and choose one of the next three tiles. So very similar to Patchwork in that regard. And then you take the tile, each tile has a time number on it. Again, very similar to Patchwork. And it ranges from, I think, 1 to 7 in terms of time. And so you move your disc that many spaces on this track. That only matters for turn order. So if you're last, you go. So you might not, you know, it doesn't go me, then you, then me, then you. It goes whoever's last on that track. And each of the tiles that you draft is a color. So I think there's 4 or 5 colors in this game. So like blue, yellow, red, etc. And also has a number of patterns on them, I guess. And so, and these, they're like little circles with requirements in them. So it might say like, might have an orange and a red dot, which means adjacent to this tile, you need to have an orange and a red. And if you have an orange and a red adjacent to this tile, you get to put one of your cute little discs on this circle. And congratulations, you're one step closer to winning the game. So very simple in terms of like how to play. The only other unique part in the Corne van Morsel Habitats flair or flavor that's in this is that same colored tiles that are adjacent to each other are considered, oh boy, how do I explain this? Oh boy. Are considered part adjacent to the one tile. So this is kind of hard to explain, but imagine you have a yellow tile that needs 4 blue. You don't need to have all 4 blue on all the 4 sides. You could have like 4 blue going off to one side. And since they're all the same color and they're all connected, you can still count them. So yes. So that obviously makes the game a little bit easier to play and a lot more interesting. And that's the game. So you just keep playing until someone gets rid of all their discs. There is a shorter variant where you play with less discs. I've never done it. I don't think it's necessary, but hey, you have options. So bits. The little chips are too tiny, but they're cute, but they're too tiny. And nothing else is special about this game. The art is bland. I don't even know if there's a theme, probably, but whatever. But it's effective. It works. You're not looking for super engrossing art or a theme with this game.
Whoa.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it would be nice, but it's not ugly. It's just nothing really, but it kind of works just because it makes it easier to see the requirements and, you know, it's like, yeah, good iconography, good graphic design from that perspective. It runs at a super nice clip. Like I said, there's a short game and a longer game. I've always played the longer game and I still don't feel like it's long. It's just right. I'm going to give this game a 5, which is kind of shocking for me. I know, because I thought I would just find it very meh. Like, this is nice, whatever. But I like puzzles. So, and it does. It just feels like a really good puzzle where and I like the race aspect of it. But this is when I was trying to figure out, like, why do I like this game so much? I mean, obviously, part of it's just me being me and liking it. But have you ever heard of the Goldilocks zone, where they talk about, like, Earth is in the Goldilocks zone, where everything is just right for life?
Yeah.
I feel like this is a Goldilocks zone game. What? So, yeah, the length is just right. The tension is just right. The depth for length is just right. The box size is a normal, it's not even, it could be way bigger, but it's like a thinner Ticket to Ride size box, but thinner. The box size is just right. It's just, yep. It's clean. It's not trying to be anything more than what it is. It's great. Right. Yeah. AP can be an issue because you're like, you know, okay, I have next 3. What do I need? How could this work? You know, so it can be a little bit slow, I guess. It's kind of expensive for what you get. I think it's like $40 Canadian almost. And it's, I mean, it's really not a lot. 48. Yeah. Whoa, really? Whew. Yeah, I could see this being a fairly polarizing game. Like, I think it's like, you know, how some brains are just like certain puzzles. And then for people who, then there's like a whole bunch of people who are just like, what? This is boring. You know what I mean? I feel like that's the type of game. Like, you either like the type of puzzle and love the game, or it's like, no. So I think it'll be a polarizing game, but I certainly like it. I'm shocked how much I like it. It's just one of those games I finished playing, I want to play again. I'm always in the mood for it. Yeah, it's great. I played it solo once. I don't really remember the solo experience all that well. I think I thought it was okay, but it's definitely better on multiplayer. But there you go. Nice. Who saw that coming?
Look at you loving those Spiel nominees.
Nova Luna. Nice. 5. I don't even own Patchwork.
Spark. You're all ready for the new moon. New moon. That's what Nova Luna means. I know my, I don't.
Latin?
Are you sure? Is that what that is? I have no idea. It is Latin for new moon, yes.
There you go.
I just read it on BGG. Although I probably could have figured it out eventually. But nice. I need to play this. This is definitely, although, because basically for everything you described for me, even though I absolutely love Patchwork, it's definitely a game I need to try first.
Before. This game has no economy or anything like that, but that's what I kind of like. Like, it's not trying to be anything. It's just simple and clean, and it just works.
It does have aside from the sticky things, the tidy. I was going to say, the tidy pieces that the game has, my hands usually feel sticky. So I'm like, I don't know if that'll work very well.
I've had ones like stick on my arm and fall off.
Oh, actually, see, I worry about that. Because I schwitz a lot, Michelle. So, you know.
Just get those, use your Century Spice Road Bits bowls. That's what I do. They make a nice clinking sound.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah.
All right. So let's see if this one gives me the spark. Hint, it probably doesn't, but it's okay. I'm a hypocrite, so I'm going to talk about Silver and Gold, which is a flip and write that came out in 2019 from the American or North American release is from Pandasaurus, I think. Yes, from Pandasaurus, designed by Phil Walker Harding with art by Oliver Frodenreich. Plays 2-4 players in 20 minutes and is 1.15. Have you talked about this on the show?
Probably, maybe.
I feel like it's a game you would talk about, but then maybe not. I don't know. But it's like a whole new world to me, Michelle, anyway, with Flick and Roland Wright, because yeah. I've shunned them for so long. So all this is new to me. So, but just to give you a recap, if we have already talked about it, and that's okay, is Silver and Gold, which is a flip and write game where you are going hunting for treasures. What you do is you have I don't know if it's dry erase or wet erase, but you have a little pen, a dry erase pen. And what you are going to do is you are going to flip off polyomino pieces from a deck. I think there's a deck of 8, and you're going to do seven times. You're going to flip over the cards for 4 rounds. And what you are trying to do is you start the game with choosing 2 of these quote-unquote treasure maps, which are various shapes that can be filled out by the polyomino pieces. And when you flip over polyomino pieces, when the polyomino cards, you are going to fill in that particular shape in whatever rotation you want on your treasure map. And the treasure maps, once completed, are worth a variety of different points. I want to say they range from 8 to 14 and have some bonuses as well in it. The other thing you can do is there are coins, so you fill out a thing and it's like there's a race to see who can fill their lines of coins the fastest, and you get bonus points for that. There are little trees that there's going to be a line of four maps in the middle at any given time, so each time when you finish a map you take one from the middle, or I think you can draw a blind too from the deck. But when you cover a tree with one of your shapes or part of your shape, it's worth the amount of points that tree plus however many trees are in the middle. So it might be worth 2 or 3 points or even just 1 point. Who knows? I'm trying to think what else you can get points for. There's also like X's that you can cross, which give you a bonus point. I think that's it.
The cards themselves, when you complete a card,
yeah,
you get a new card, but you get the points on the cards.
Yes, you'll get the point. Yeah, and then
there's a few that are like, for every orange card you complete, you get a point or whatever.
They have like bonus things, it says in the corner. And yeah, you do this 4 times, then you tally up the points. Everything is done on a deck of dry erase cards, which is nice. So it's a nice small box game. That's kind of it. Yeah, so this was a new to me game. I originally got this game maybe like a month and a half ago because I saw on BGG that someone showed how you can actually play it remotely. So I thought it would be something we might be able to do with our kind of when we play games remotely, but I never got around to that. However, my wife was going through a bunch of the games and we were deciding, she was thinking, you know, try and pick out games that she would want to play or want to try. And she saw this one and I explained the turn. She said, oh yeah, I'd like to try that. And it turns out she actually really likes it a lot.
Which is
like one of the only games. And it plays real. It plays fine at 2. I can't imagine it playing terribly different at 3 or 4. BGG says it's best at 2 to 4. So everything. So we've played it a handful of times now, and she quite enjoys the puzzle and whoops me every time we play it, which isn't surprising. So I'm enjoying it just for that aspect, but I'm also enjoying it. Like I'm enjoying the kind of puzzly nature of it. Yeah, so I would say definitely it's a gooder for me. Again, because I don't know I'll be playing this when we kind of get back, if we ever get back to like, you know, normal gaming habits. But for now, I am enjoying it. I love this. I like the speed of it a lot. And I will say, my daughter loves it. She actually tries really hard to fill in the shapes, different things. And just for, it's so neat, just kind of seeing like the same thing with Second Chance, which my daughter's been playing with like the cards from that a bunch as well. Just kind of the spatial reasoning and seeing, even though it's not quite clicking there yet, to see her kind of trying to work out the different shapes and figure it out is really actually cool. We don't play with the rules, but we just kind of sit there and mark down and fill in the maps with our things. So that's been really neat too. So I really enjoyed my time with it in kind of a variety of different ways. That's Silver and Gold.
Cool. Yeah, I ended up selling this one
Yeah,
I would have given it a three.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I did love the fact that you could write on the cards. That's
really neat.
That's pretty cool.
You go through a lot of paper towel though, cleaning it off after, and that. Oh no, it's not toilet paper. I guess it's not worth that much, but whatever.
I the best $6 I ever spent in gaming was for Doodle Quest. It was on sale at, I think it was at Chapters, which is a bookstore, and yeah, it was $6, and it came with these four erasers for dry erasers. And they're incredible, and I just have them out of the game, and I use them all the time. That's and I've had them for years.
That's great. Cool. You're smarter than I am.
We knew that though.
Yeah.
All right. We're doing a lot of light games today, hey?
Yeah.
All right. My last is Santa Monica. This was published in 2020. Has a current rating of 7.7 with 259 ratings on the BGG. Plays 2 to 4 in 35 to 40 minutes. A weight of 2.08.
I'm anxious to hear your thoughts on this one.
Okay.
And curious.
Okay. Well, you're going to hear them. If you stop talking. No, I'm kidding. I didn't know the art. The design. Okay, so the designer is Josh Wood. Apparently, he also did some of the art with Bridget Indelicato and Jeremy Nugent, and it's published by AEG.
Oh. He is the designer of Cat Lady, just FYI, which a game I quite I enjoy that game.
That's one I keep wanting to try, and I know an expansion just came out for it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, getting tempted again these days. I love drafting games. So
I think he did all the art for Cat Lady too. Okay, I will stop talking. Go ahead.
Okay. So Santa Monica is a tableau drafting game. What I mean by that is there are a number of cards out in the middle of the table, and on your turn you will be selecting one card from those. There are two rows. You can always select from the first row, not the second one. When you take a card, the card from the row above slides down and becomes available for the next person. What you're trying to do is, well, there's a number of ways to score points, but I mean, it's set collection at its very, very base. So there are cards that will give you points for tags, which is basically icons on cards that are adjacent to it. So I might say for every eyeglass or sunglass tag or icon adjacent to this card, you will get 1 point. So there's that kind of thing. And there's cards where you have, there's like a ring and it'll say have blue people in here. And if you have two blue people, you'll get 2 points. And so obviously some cards give you blue people and pink people. Actually, I can't remember the colors. Why can't I think of the colors? Orange, maybe.
Some sort of pastel.
Yeah, orange, blue, and then, and then you have green dudes. And then some of them let you move those people so that you can get them in your circles because they show up on the card that you put down that gave you those people. And there's kind of like, it's kind of like that, like a bunch of different ways to score points based on how you lay out your cards, which is also an important part of this game. So there's beach cards and there's street cards. And in front of you at the beginning of the game, you'll get, it actually looks a lot like the Imperial Settlers board, just a long rectangular board. And you'll notice that on the top, there's beach and on the bottom there's street. And so when you draft a card, you can play it on either side. So you can start on the right and go further right, or start on the left and go further left, and go in between those things. And all the beach goes on the top and all the street cards go on the bottom. So that's where you're trying to figure out your adjacency. And then there's also like some modifiers that make the game slightly more interesting. So there's this ice cream truck that moves from row to row that gives you sand dollars if you draft from that, moves from column to column. will give you sand dollars if you draft from that column. And then there's a little dude that moves around, and if you draft from his column, he'll give you movement points. And then there's, in every game, there's actions that you pick. So I think there's like maybe six tiles that the game comes with, and you pick out two. So it'll say, for example, pay four sand dollars, and then you can take a card from the front and the back. So things like that. And that's the gist. So then the game ends when someone lays their 14th card, and then you score up points, and there's points like everywhere. Yeah. It's one of those games where you like pull out the scoring pad and it's like, okay, here we go. I'm sure I've missed a few little things, but anyways, that should give you a general idea. Oh, and then there's a few different scoring tiles as well. So those will be slightly different every game. So for example, it'll say score 2 points for every wave card in your longest orthogonally adjacent row of wave cards, for example, right? So, okay, this game, you want to get wave cards, that sort of thing. Okay, so there you go. That's how Santa Monica works. We'll talk about the bits, because I always start with the bits. The bits are good. They have a bunch of cool little meeples. Like I said, they're orange and blue and green, and they have little print screening on them. So like the orange ones have little cameras around their neck, and the blue ones have sunglasses on. I mean, it's a small detail, but it just makes the game kind of fun. The cards are fine quality. Everything else is fine. There's a little purple or pink ice cream truck, which is fun also. The art is incredible. Mm-hmm. I could see some people finding it kind of bland, but it is so cute. And there's like lots of whimsical names and details. Sorry. On the cards. So like we had a lot of fun just like reading the cards and talking about what we were building. It very, very cute art there. So that was nice. What else? The iconography. So this game's it's supposed to feel like, I think, pretty light and quick. And I thought there was a little bit too much iconography for this game. Like there's quite a bit. Everyone gets a card with all the icons on it. So that's a bit of a downer. There's not a ton of diversity between the cards or the scoring, even like the scoring tiles. I think there's only like maybe 4 to 6 different ones that come out. So, or 4 to 6 that are in the box and one comes out. But yeah, I don't know. There's just not a ton of like diversity in terms of what the cards do and the scoring tiles themselves. I thought that, like, speaking of Nova Luna, where I was like, it's not trying to be anything more than it is. I kind of felt like this was trying a little bit too hard to be something more than it was. You know, drafting I typically find is fairly is a bit of a lighter mechanic, and I thought that this game lost some cleanliness in design for things like the movement, and there's the special meeples and all the iconography. Like it still worked. It wasn't like overly heavy or anything, like, you know, or overly complex, but it was just like a little bit too much for what it is, you know, for the weight, I guess, and the length it's supposed to be. Yeah, and then at the very end, so throughout the game, you're trying to, like, collect these meeples. I mean, this isn't the only way to score points, but one of the ways to score points is to collect these meeples and move them around into these circles, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not like, hey, every 2 blue guys you get here, you get 2 points. It's like you can only have 2 blue guys here, and they will score you 2 points. No more, no less, period. So, and not a lot of cards give you movement points, but at the very end, when the game ends, you can move like all of your orange guys 1 and your blue guys 3. Like, it's crazy. Hmm. And it kind of, it felt like a bit too big of a gift. Like, it was just like, I wanted it to be a bit more of a struggle. Like, maybe some of the cards could have more or something. I'd be interested to understand why they went that route, but it was kind of like you're working for this, and then it's like, oh, really? Like, we can all just, really? We can just move? Like, okay, sure. You know, I don't know. It just felt really kind of almost bizarre at the end. Like, I don't know if it was like a balancing thing or what, but anyway, I feel like I'm saying a lot of bad things. I also felt like sometimes there were no good choices. It could have been lack of planning on my part, but because you can only choose from the first row, sometimes it was like, yeah, I guess I'll just do this one because it's the best option for me, but it's not necessarily what I want to be doing. Again, maybe that's not a big deal. It's supposed to be short and light and whatever, but I just felt some turns were kind of like a bit of a wash in terms of that. Mm-hmm. I do really think that this game could use an expansion. Just some cards that kind of mix things up, make it a little bit more interesting, maybe give you more interesting choices. That kind of thing. So yeah, a lot of negatives. I still enjoy the game. I will play it. I look forward to playing it. I just, you know, there were a lot of things that took it down for me. I do also love drafting. I'll put that out there. It's one of my favorite mechanisms. If it's not a mechanism you enjoy, you probably will not like this game. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess kind of where I landed is it's not a not so clean but still fun design that is mm-hmm. trying to be a little bit more than what it should be. However, it seems to be getting a ton of love on BGG. People are raving about it, so I don't know. There
got
you go.
Got the spark for you.
It's a 3 for me. It definitely doesn't have the spark. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a 3. It's what is it? I mean, it's fine. Yep.
Yeah.
I'm holding on to it. I don't think I'll hold on to it forever, but I definitely want to keep playing it for a little bit. But yeah, it's a bit messy is how I felt about it. So there you go. Santa Monica. Sorry, man. Don't mean to like take your excitement down a notch there.
Oh, I wasn't excited. That's fine.
That's
fine. Oh. No, I was curious to hear. So yeah, I feel like I heard, I can't remember. I think it was the Dukes of Dice podcast and they kind of ripped it a new one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like this was maybe like a month ago. They had lots of issues. Quite a few of the similar issues that you talked about actually. So, Yeah. So that kind of temper, I was all excited about it because obviously I love Cat Lady. I'm a huge fan of Cat. I don't know if he's done anything else, but huge fan of Cat Lady. I've played it a lot. It's a very simple drafting game that adds a little extra step on top of like if you're looking for something a little bit more than Sushi Go. And yeah, so I've been kind of like aside from the art, which is gorgeous, but I think, yeah.
Mm. And it's also in a bigger box again, right?
Yeah.
Those darn box sizes.
Yep.
All right. So there's our pew-pews.
Now
we are doing our hot topic. Hot topic.
Or is this a spotlight? Or is it...
Oh, wait, you're right. I didn't update it. This is our... Not our hot pocket topic. But actually our BGG thread spotlight, wherein we use other people's comments on a BGG thread to make content for our show.
Mm-hmm.
Like the winners that we are.
And this one, we are going to talk about the pettiest reason you passed on a game. We are going to get all petty. So, y'all. So this particular thread, which is also in the show notes, if y'all want to see the thread and contribute to it, or just tell people we talked about it and how awesome it was to hear about this thread on All the Bits. At Nazi, the original poster, or OP, if you will, said, "For me, the game was Res Arcana. I was so close to buying it, but my brain decided that the life token symbols looked like onions and I couldn't get past it. I went with Race for the Galaxy instead."
Onions, no good.
I don't think my pettiness is anywhere near to this level.
Jeff said, "How about an ostentatious component? The tree in Everdell was a strong factor that kept me from getting it when I first fell in love with it after playing it solo on Tabletopia."
Kay Klitz said, "I routinely pass on games with square cards. I dislike them so much." Yeah, I could see that.
I get it, I guess, but... If it's like a really good game, I mean, you have to buy all the games, Sean. Mm-hmm. All right. Leela will not get the Wingspan expansion because the purple eggs are ridiculous.
Oh, come on. Love the purple egg. Larry L. said, I have yet to take a good look at the Quacks of Quedlinburg because of the name.
And there were other people that responded, and they're like, totally.
I love the name. It feels so good on my lips and my tongue.
It is a fun one to say. All right. Arvid says, I got rid of Gloom of Killforth, a Fantasy Quest game, before playing it because I couldn't stand the glossy, shallow character illustrations. The people look like models from underwear and shampoo ads. Nothing wrong with that.
Seth Wright says, I have a weird aversion to games with score pads I feel are fiddly. I will routinely pass on a game that has me jotting down scores and calculating them at the end for 5 to 10 minutes. That's fair.
Seth, do not buy Santa Monica. Yeah, I kind of like it. It's kind of fun, but I have heard that complaint from other gamers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I hate that at the end when it takes forever. All right, Dirt Mike says, any game that requires an app, I will pass on. Or if it uses awkward size cards that I can't find a sleeve for, I will pass it, no matter how great the reviews are or how interesting it looks to play. Who knew?
I feel like
a lot of
sleevers are like that. They're like, if it's too hard to find a sleeve, I will just not own this game.
Crazy.
Michael Crisafulli said, I don't buy games with unnecessary large boxes. Boom, Michael. Woo-hoo. I understand that better on the shop shelves, but I don't have infinite space in my house. So if the box is too big for the components in it, I don't buy it. You the man, Michael.
Yep. Brian Funked said, waiting for someone to say Rococo because it's about dresses, which would be the petticoatest reason. Hey-oh. That had to go in there.
Brian Winston says, for me, it's always the same petty reason. The game is ugly.
I actually stayed away from Castles of Burgundy for a very long time because I thought it was so ugly, but I was like, oh, so many people love it, I'll give it a go. And
thank God my wife isn't like that. Boom.
John Breckenridge says, Asking for Troubles was just too orange.
See, I still want to play that because it's so orange.
Yeah.
Brendan Slade, that's such a cool name. I haven't bought Catan because I always felt there was a rivalry between Catan and Carcassonne. And because I'm a fan of Carcassonne, I won't play Catan. I don't know if that exists or it is in my head. It doesn't matter. Let's just make it canon right now.
I think it might be in his head.
I'm going to join Brendan's headcanon and it's going to be a rivalry now.
Okay, sounds good. I like it. All right. Jason DeBruin says, games with miniatures that are too big or nice. I love miniatures, but I like the quality to be that of what you would find in a Seer. I don't know. But he basically doesn't like good quality miniatures, which is like incredibly random. I love it. Yeah.
Joe Brow says, I refuse to play Photosynthesis because of the way the sun rotates 360 degrees around the game board during a game. That is just not how the sun works. I have heard that before from people, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Well, a person, not people, but yes.
Can you imagine if people wouldn't play Euros because that's not the way? That's not the way. The theme isn't even in there. Yeah. All right. Jeffrey Hudson says, I've not bought a game before because the hot deal in the forums had gone up by $1.50 by the time I found out. Someone should have tacked free shipping on it and Jeffrey would have bought it.
That is true. But I am like Jeffrey. So have you ever, do you know of this, the Camel website?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So Camel Camel Camel, for those of you who do not know what it is, but I'm sure most people on the internet know what it is. It's like a price tracker, right? Thing for Amazon, and you can go in and you could set things and you could see when this was like the lowest ever price on Amazon. And I will not buy anything on Amazon, like, unless it's like an absolute, like, I am of necessity, unless it has reached the lowest price when I buy it. I could see where Jeffrey is going with that.
Yeah, $1.50. yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, Yo Ban Chan says, this is unbelievably petty, but I never play No Thanks because whenever anyone asks if I want to play it, I must go for the joke and say no thanks. I hear it's actually quite good, but I wouldn't know. That's best. The best post.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yep. So
what about you? Are there any?
Yeah, well, I don't know if you put this one for me or...
I did.
But okay, yeah, stickering. So stickering, as you guys know, is my big one is... I will... Yeah. So is this a play a game or pass on the game, right? So yeah, so I will... Yeah. I will avoid buying a game if there's anything more than like a single sheet of reasonably sized stickers. That is my cutoff. But anything where it's like dots, like that whole Rise of Queensdale situation. And what was the other one? There was another one. I can't remember, but yeah.
I know what you're talking about too, but yeah.
Rise of Queensdale was really bad. I had to sell it because I couldn't do the sticker.
Every time I sticker, I think of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mine was, I don't know that it's so petty, but for me, if there's like a long errata, I can't.
Yeah, that's fair. That's
yeah. Like, I was kind of still interested in what's the Ignacy Trevicek game that was space themed. Yeah, First Martians. I loved Robinson Crusoe. I was like, oh, this game's gonna be great. And then I read somewhere it was like 62 page errata, and I was like, I can't. There's no.
Not
but I feel like that's just common sense, not being petty. But
yeah, no, I agree. And another one I tossed on here, it came up on the thing, on the post, and we both talked about it on this.
I think it's
box size, and I think that's a universal one, right? Is that
yeah.
Like, if it's got to be like, I don't know, and that, and I totally understand, as someone mentioned here, it's a marketing or a, you know, sales thing, right? Is that you want to take up space on that shelf, on that retail shelf. So I understand, like I totally understand why, but I won't have any of it. I cannot have any of it, Michelle.
Yeah, I agree. I will pretty much buy anything if I know it's good. Like if I've played it before, or I've heard like really, really, really good things, then I will buy pretty much anything. But there are a lot of little things that will take me away from buying like something I know nothing about, or something that has like, yeah, stickers or is oversized or whatever.
And I'm sure if I look on my shelves, I have plenty of games that are probably an oversized box.
Probably. I think like
we've all established I'm a super hypocrite anyway. So,
well, and as much as you might not like it at the end of the day, there's only so much control you have over that situation, right?
Yep.
Really. Unless you don't want to get any of the games that you like.
So. Well, no, that wouldn't be, this wouldn't be speaking of games we don't like, but speaking of games we might not play for a while or something. Oh, you did a good one there for our self-shaming bit, wherein we show our true colors and admit we are just like you because we too have unplayed games sitting on our shelves.
It's true. It's true.
Kind of came up, and now that I'm thinking about the art from this post, I could kind of see it, having gone through it, even though the art is gorgeous. The game I'm going to talk about is Shadows of Killforth. And so this is a follow-up to Gloom of Killforth, which was at Arvid talked about. And this is a game from Tristan Hall that is a adventure dungeon crawl type game. And I recently got Shadow of Killforth is the kind of Eastern version of it. So very much with that Asian type influence. I think more Japanese than anything else. Japanese influence, so like samurais, that type of thing, versus a lot more of just the typical fantasy tropes. With Shadows, I think it's a little bit darker. From everything I've read, it's the same. The
description calls it a game with a gothic edge.
Yeah, sure.
That's what I'm going to start saying about Euros. They have a beige edge.
A beige. That's hilarious. the reason I got this game is the art. First friend of the show, Jeremy Howard, recommended it to me, and it is absolutely a gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous game. And the artist is Anya Krevchowska, I think is her name, and is absolutely stunning. Like I love, love, love the art. Is just jaw dropping, and it plays 1-4. But from everything the internet says, it's a solo experience. It's not a game you would ever want to play with four people, even I think with two people, from what I've read, you wouldn't necessarily want to play. But you're kind of just going on missions type deal, building up your character. So again, kind of, guess what? I haven't played it. When we went into lockdown, I was like, oh, okay, this is my excuse. This is my time when I'm going to get into solo gaming. And I still haven't played it. And in fact, when we're recording now, a week and a half ago, a week ago-ish, I had very sore throat, so I had to be kind of quarantined in my bedroom for 3 days. I played tons of Marvel Champions on my floor in the bedroom by myself. I had this set up for like a day straight, which absolutely drove my wife bananas when she peered into the bedroom that was set up on the floor. But I did not get around to playing it. I did learn how to play it. So I'm hoping that I will finally kind of get into that meaty solo game that I feel like I should like, which I feel like if it's not going to be this, it's not going to be anything. But I will try. I will try. I'm hoping I will have good news by next time, but we'll see. Who knows?
So for reals, speaking of meaty solo games that you should like, my shelf shame game is On Mars. Uh-huh. So I played the Galaris by Vitaly Lacerda, who also designed On Mars, many years ago. And I quite enjoyed the play of it. However, I was not interested in having to ever read that rule book again or try to teach it to somebody. I was just like, there's just, no, it's too much.
Fair.
So, yeah, it's been a few years. Last year, I found that a lot of heavier Euro designs came out from some of my favorite designers, and I quite enjoyed them. So I was thinking maybe it's time to try another Lacerda. Mm-hmm. And I also love space themed. So I got On Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not played it, a full game of it. However, I have attempted this game, similar to your situation there. Mm-hmm. I set it up. It took a very long time. I read the rule book. It took a very long time. And then I tried to play the solo version, which had almost another rule book. Like, it was involved. And when you're already trying to grapple with complex rules and how a game system works and doing solo AI on top of that, or Anima, I was like, okay. I was slogging through it. And I think after an hour, I stopped myself and I said, Michelle, are you having fun? And the answer was a resounding no, I am not. So I packed it up and it's back on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope I will bring it out again someday. But I am not sure. There you go. On Mars, I'm not counting that painful experience as a play. Although I'm very tempted to, just so I can say,
I mean, you should. You went through a lot.
I did go through a lot. It was a harrowing experience. Thank you for recognizing that, Sean. I appreciate it. So On Mars. There you go.
Fair.
My shelf of shame.
Yeah. Cool.
All right. Well, before we close out the show, we just want to say thanks again to all of our amazing listeners and our show sponsor, Board Game Bliss, a store where you can find an amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. The next time you are playing with someone who has AP, may we suggest you use that time to click the subscribe button and leave us a review on Apple Podcast. Thanks again. Bye.
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 See you later.
01 by 01.